coming up in this episode. Never about the house. It's about what happened in the house and your state of mind when you were in the house.
Found a demolition notice that was clipped to a tree branch. Yeah, it was just an empty lot.
One of my nieces now has my old bedroom. I mean, it's kind of cool to see, but kind of like, oh, wow, this is, you know, time is marching on for sure.
Yeah, yeah. This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoya.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. All right, Orlando, question for you.
Go ahead.
So have you ever moved out of a place, like a house or an apartment or whatever, and then, you know, years pass and then you have an occasion to walk or drive by that place just to like see what became of it? Have you ever done that?
All the time. All the time.
Really?
I'm like obsessed with the places that I used to live with.
So tell me a story of one.
Well, I mean, all the places that I've lived with, that I've lived in are still standing. But like I was most interested in my college apartment in like, because it was really old when I was there and really run down. And I'm like, is it still run down and old?
Yeah.
Yeah, was it worse, significantly worse, or about the same?
It was worse, yeah.
About as you remembered it.
And of course, I, you know, don't want to mention my ex, but I drove by his house once.
I think we've all done that to some extent, yeah.
And is there another truck in the driveway? Whose truck is that?
Do I know that truck? Well, I mean, that I bring it up because that's kind of the vibe that that today's book gives. It's called Broken Houses, by Georgia's poet laureate, Chelsea Rathbun. She lives in Macon now, teaches at Mercer University, and it's a collection of poetry, and it's a pretty tight connection here in this book, all poems that have some connection to a house or a home. The connection may be mentioned explicitly in most of these poems, and it's not always like a home that you can actually live in. Like for one is a dollhouse, for example. Mm,
so a whole book of poetry based on like former homes.
Yeah, former homes are homes that, you know, you drive by a home that's like way out of your price range and you can lust after it.
Oh.
Stuff like that, you know,
yeah,
because a house can be
cute. Well, that's cute. That's a cute theme.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you all the ways that a house can be, you know, reflective of your internal states. It can be reflective of a stage in your life or an aspiration that you have. It's the setting for family drama, family relationships as they unfold. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a really interesting way to structure a book.
So what made her settle on this? What was the story behind like, oh, I'm going to write a poetry collection about houses?
Well, as we do for all our conversations on Narrative Edge, we speak to the author about their book. So I interviewed Rathbun and I asked her if she had sort of set out to write poems about homes or if she was just writing poems and the theme of houses and homes kind of emerged naturally. And she kind of said both or neither, both and neither. She said she'd written previously about her father's childhood and he did not have a great childhood. And she continued to think about his childhood and her own, and she grew up in the Miami area.
My family, both my parents grew up extremely poor, and then money was just always incredibly tight. When I was small, we lived in a series of really dismal apartments, and then my parents, through the help of a VA loan, they kind of squeaked their way into a house in Miami. And we were always worried that something was going to happen and we're going to lose the house. And so I was thinking about, you know, financial instability, natural disasters. You know, the house was directly in the path of Hurricane Andrew in 1982.
Miami, you have to worry about that. Yeah,
mm-hmm, exactly. So there was, you know, thinking about various kinds of ruin, right? And somewhere while I was having all these thoughts about houses, kind of as a broad concept, I came across or was handed a binder that my grandmother had put together, family history.
And we won't get into the details here, but that kind of sends her down the path to deeper research into her father's childhood. Her father was a foster kid. The book is not sort of devoted to poems about her father necessarily. He's here in a lot of these poems. He was Actually, his job was pretty interesting. He was a pilot, and he was one of those pilots that back in the day when you didn't have GPS and couldn't find the traffic, he was one of those pilots that flew over the highways and reported live traffic jams back to the radio stations. So old school radio job.
And did you learn that from the poem? Or
yeah,
from,
I learned that from the poem. There's a poem about, I think it's called Flying Lessons, where she describes being up in the air and a profile that was written of her father.
Well, you know, like with any poetry collection and I think last time we did a short story collection too, and it's like, well, we can talk about the theme,
yeah,
but let's hear it or discuss it in actuality. So maybe a poem?
Yeah, let's hear a poem. So this one, actually, when we spoke, I had her read a poem, and for podcast reasons, we had to choose a short one, and the short one that I was encouraging her to read actually doesn't have a tight connection to this theme of houses per se, but it does focus on a relationship that occurs here and there in the book, and that's the relationship with her mother. And it's called The Flattened Crusts, The White Skins Seeping.
The Flattened Crusts, The White Skins Seeping. I'd like to think it was a stomach flu, something I could not help, that turned me against my mother's peanut butter sandwiches. But after months of identical bagged lunches, I renounced them at once and absolutely. I knew it was wrong to throw good food away, so I made a project out of ruining them, sliding the sandwiches beneath one leg, then the other, until they thinned and fissured. Such quiet violence. And I could return to my second grade classroom, my stomach growling. This went on for weeks until the guilt became too much to bear. When I confessed, weeping, my mother did not remind me how she walked to school hungry, how she whispered, "free lunch," to the cashier so no one else would know, how she said it so quietly the cashier could not hear her, or pretended not to hear her, making her repeat, free lunch, louder, louder, louder. Instead, my mother hugged me and sent me back to school with tuna fish.
So what do you think?
I love it. You know, first of all, I do not like peanut butter. So I can understand, you know, squishing this peanut butter sandwich away and peanut butter and jelly too. I mean, like, who put those two combinations together?
We're going to have to disagree on that.
Point. Okay.
But anyway,
and also,
stick with the poem.
The free lunch situation too, because, you know, I remember getting those free lunches as a kid. Like in those days, I don't think they do this anymore. But when I was a kid, like if you forgot your lunch money, you got a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And like everybody knew that you got a peanut, you lost your lunch money. And so you got to sit at this, you know, you didn't sit at a special table, but you know, everybody could see. It's like the free lunch. Yeah, I have connection with that too. So, I mean, I can get this poem.
And the mother is so sweet, right? I mean, she recognizes her daughter's sort of aversion to it and doesn't sort of rub it in and say, "How dare you? When I was a kid, I would have felt lucky to have a peanut butter sandwich," you know? So, it's just a sweet moment of empathy between mother and child that I really, really liked. And she paints such a clear picture of the situation, the home life. I guess maybe that's where the connection
there's
to
the
home
theme.
Is. Yeah.
I mean, there's the theme.
We're seeing home life in action, even though it's not in the physical home. And all of these poems are to some extent, moments in time where a relationship between two people really has a chance to grow a little more complicated.
Well, let's talk about how she might riff on this theme.
Yeah, well, you remember I mentioned the dollhouse earlier in this conversation. So the poem about the dollhouse is a sweet example of this because it's not a home that she could live in, but it's another example of her interacting with her mother. So she had been pining over this dollhouse for birthdays and Christmases, and finally when she gets it, it's in a box that needs to be assembled. It doesn't come fully assembled, and it's not an easy assembly,
it's like
right?
An IKEA situation.
It seems like worse than IKEA. Like there was, she mentions in the poem the verb sand, to sand it down, you know. And there's glue, and so when she, you know, it's a complicated project that they put together, and you know the finished product is like, yeah, there's glue dripping down the walls, and it's not exactly the beautiful thing that she saw in the showrooms or in the catalog or wherever she happened to see it. And so both mother and daughter are sort of sensing each other's disappointment with the whole endeavor, but putting on a brave face so that they don't sort of crumble.
Yeah, you don't want to cry in front of a dollhouse.
Yeah,
that would be,
especially when, you know, the mother, again, it's a story about the poverty that they lived in. Like the mother really saved up to provide this, and really wanted to make her daughter happy, and it's not exactly what it was supposed to be, but they both sort of put on brave faces and almost for the other person, they put on the brave face for each other. And that is the sweetness that I got out of that poem, that once again, mother and daughter are kind of looking out for each other emotionally. It was really nice. And then also on this theme, there was, like we were talking about earlier, revisiting places used to live. She talks about taking her husband back to her college apartment, the one she lived in long ago.
I went to Florida State University, and I had this, what I thought was this just absolutely full of character, you know, lovely little garage apartment. And it was downtown. It was away from campus. And it was really small and awkward and, you know, not in great shape. And I think it continued to kind of fall apart in the decades after I left. But yeah, my husband is also a poet, and his name is James Davis May. And we were both reading together at Florida State, which was like so cool, you know, to go back to my alma mater and give a reading. And we, FSU put us up in a hotel two blocks from where I used to live. I thought, oh, this is gonna be wonderful. You know, let me go show you, get to see the past me, you know? And we're walking up and down the street, like, where is this house? And then found a demolition notice that was clipped to a tree branch. Yeah, it was just an empty lot. Mm. Rubble, there was a mailbox tipped over. And I think if we'd been there, you know, a month later, construction would have started. Like two townhouses just shot up in its place. If we'd been there a couple weeks earlier, we would have seen it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, my goal was just, I wasn't going to knock on the door or anything, but I thought about, you know, just maybe peering in the windows.
And that 100% resonated with me. I had something of a similar experience. So I went to grad school in Wilmington, North Carolina. And when I was done with grad school, I moved back to New England, like 1,000 miles away. And that place felt so distant to me. And I kept having these like dreams of the place. I don't know if you had this experience with the places that you've moved away from, but I kept having dreams of it. And it was only when I finally returned with my significant other and we kind of looked at the house where I used to live. I had an apartment in this big pink house right on Market Street, which ran through right through downtown. And after I went, the dream stopped. So
wow, it got rid of the memories that was sort of festering in your mind.
Something was still lingering there in my brain. And after I went and just checked all those places out again, you know, ate at some of the same restaurants that I had remembered. And I guess maybe the place felt more accessible to me after I went and revisited it and said, yeah, you can come back. You can come back. Of course, she got this feeling in this poem, right, where you can't come back. This house is gone.
Well, you know, it's never about the house. It's about what happened in the house and your state of mind when you were in the house. And, you know, I mean, every place that I've lived has, you know, marked a milestone. Obviously, when you move, that's marking a milestone or a change in your life. So, yeah, I think every place that I've lived has marked some sort of significant transition in my life. So I imagine those type of thoughts come out in these poems.
So how do you think you would feel? Because you mentioned earlier that all these places that you've lived still stand. Uh-huh. How do you think you'd feel if you encountered what she encountered, which is that one of these places was just leveled and it's either like a parking lot or like a couple of townhouses?
Well,
now,
in the case of the ratty apartment in college, I think they need to tear that one down.
It's overdue. Yeah.
They need to get some better apartments for those kids. Obviously, I think my childhood home, obviously, that's my parents' home, would disturb me much if that was gone.
Well, your parents still live there?
My mother is dead, but my mother is dead. My father still lives there, yes. And I grew up there. He lives in the house that I grew up in. So, yeah, I mean, if I think some houses would affect me more than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that about my childhood home, too, which my brother bought for my father when my father passed away. Going back there and seeing that one of my nieces now has my old bedroom. I mean, it's kind of cool to see, but kind of like, oh, wow, this is, you know, time is marching on for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you said she's the Poet Laureate of Georgia. Like, what is the Poet Laureate of Georgia do?
Well, I did ask her because I wasn't sure either. So I asked her, like, what was the most recent duty you carried out as official poet laureate of the state of Georgia? She's been poet laureate for years, since 2019. And she says it was judging the high school poetry contest.
It's marvelous, you know, because I will sit down and the number of entries varies from year to year, but I might have, you know, 250, 300 poems, sometimes as few as 100. But they're on so many different subjects. They're so, so many of them are just really incredible. Mm-hmm. It's very, always very hard to choose a winner. But it really just gives me a sense of just the incredible variety of voices and, you know, things that Georgian young people are interested in.
Talk about this book as sort of an experience. What gives it the narrative edge? I myself like collections like these because you can pick it up, put it down, and it puts you in another state of mind.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, each of these poems can be taken by itself and be a totally satisfying experience. I think what makes the collection special is that each one kind of builds on the others and expands your idea of what the setting of home means and what houses can mean. The poem about the peanut butter sandwich, you know, there's a moment, there's also tension there. This is kind of common for her poems. Like, there's a bit of tension. The tension kind of builds, and then there's something of a release, kind of like how, you know, a short story might unfold.
Do they ever make you feel uncomfortable?
Oh, yes. Like, there's one poem, I can't remember the name of it, but it basically talks about cockroaches.
Okay.
You know, and she and I share a real disdain for these things.
Me too.
Where she like talks about putting her foot in a shoe and then having one in there and just skin crawl. Anyway, so yeah,
okay.
She can really elicit a reaction. But the buildup and release of each of these poems, I think, really is wonderful. And I've said this about the type of poetry that I like on this podcast before, but it bears repeating here because, you know, these are not poems where they're just kind of obsessed with the sound of themselves and the words don't make a lot of sense. It's not lyric poetry.
Don't diss it.
I'm only saying that it's not my cup of tea. There's a space for it. For people who can get into that, right? Like it's finding the associations deep in your subconscious, using the sounds to make them resonate. Like a tuning fork in your brain. And I do not have that. I like a good narration. That's not to say that these poems are not sensitive to the way they sound and to meter and language. They certainly are. But the story at the heart of it is really what moves me along. The narrative poetry aspect here. And it always builds to something greater. There's a relationship at stake. There's a setting that means something. I always felt like I was in good hands with each of these poems. And the sum of the parts add up to something greater. So I really appreciated that about Broken Houses.
Well, it's great to hear about it. It's called Broken Houses by Georgia Poet Laureate Chelsea Rathburn. Thanks for telling me about it.
Happy to.